And now it's time for the Talk of the Nation opinion page. This week, millions of Americans will check their math and their wireless connection, take two aspirin, and file their taxes over the Internet. Filing online has more than a few advantages, which got Andrew Ruscha wondering, is this all the feds can offer us in the way of e-government? His op-ed, co-written with Micah Sifry, appeared last week on Politico.com. And Andrew Ruscha joins us now from our bureau in New York. He's the founder and publisher of the Personal Democracy Forum. Nice to have you on the program today.
Pleasure to be here.
And we want to hear from listeners as well. What government services or information do you wish you could access online? E-petitions, e-legislation, e-demonstrations? And are there online innovations your state or local government use that the feds might do well to copy? 800-989-8255. You can send us email, talk@npr.org, and also comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And in your piece, Andrew, you write about, I forget who it is you're quoting, but saying, isn't it interesting that the web page that works the best that the government offers is the one we pay our taxes on?
That's right. That was a quote from Steve Clift, and he's making comment of the fact that the government seems only interested in getting money from us when they're contacting us online. They're not really interested in our opinions or what we might know or how we collectively might be able to organize ourselves to make the world a better place.
And you give us some examples. In Estonia, for example, an official website called Today I Decide, launched by the government press office, that allows citizens to comment on draft laws and submit their own ideas for new ones. Well, that sounds like a great idea. Estonia, of course, a much smaller place than the United States.
Yeah, but it's happening in other larger countries as well. In Britain, you can petition your member of parliament directly to 10 Downing Street. And in fact, they're working on a plan to allow the over 7 million people who have actually submitted petitions to actually find each other online, creating a social network, a Facebook or a MySpace, if you will, for people who are interested in particular issues and in contacting their government officials.
Is any of this, though, does it produce something other than giving voters or citizens a chance to vent?
Well, the reality of it is that one politician can't solve the problems for everybody, but everybody connected together might be able to solve the problems for their town, their city, or their state, or even their country. And so what we're seeing in the commercial space or in the use of the Internet in general, we're seeing a huge amount of collaborative crowdsourcing and the ability of people to find each other, work together, and to advance ideas. And there's no reason why that couldn't be applied to government. Unfortunately, our government officials, for the most part, and those elected leaders, don't know the difference between a server and a waiter. and they tend to be mostly interested in the financial aspects of how they might be able to reach out to constituents to raise money online. And very few of them have thought about how they might be able to use these tools to actually represent us better and to get our input.
Another example you provide, last fall in New Zealand, the government launched a wiki, which is a site anyone can edit, to solicit citizen input on the wording of a new National Policing Act before it was formally introduced in Parliament. And that's fascinating. It's not going to be the wording necessarily of the law itself, but it provides a lot of interesting input.
Well, if you think about the fact that most city council hearings or school board hearings happen in, you know, for 1 hour or 2 hours, and most people who are working class can't attend because they're busy trying to make ends meet, there's no reason why the Internet, which is really an economy of abundance, can offer far more opportunities for participation. Every city council hearing in the country could be a blog, in effect, where people could submit their testimony. They don't necessarily have to appear. Wikis allow people to parse and to go through types of language for legislation. In fact, if the mayor of New York was to ask everyone in the city of New York to take a picture of all the potholes and submit it onto a site that we could map it on Google Maps, people would do it. But there's this notion in our society, particularly in the United States, that somehow politicians are there to serve the public and they know better than the public. And they don't realize that the collective energy of the public might actually know more than they do.
So what suggestions might you have for a better e-government? How could the government use the Internet better and more interactively with its citizens? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's go to Brian. Brian with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hi.
Go ahead, Brian.
Hi. I think it would be great if we could nominate our politicians for local, state, federal office online. I think that would, I think then we could nominate regular people just like us, and really have a populist form of government.
So avoiding that political party nonsense.
Exactly. We could return to the way democracy was meant to be set up and have really good people with good ideas running for office.
Andrew Ruscha, is this being done?
Not in the United States, but clearly there are more and more groups that are on the fringe of, or let's call third-party groups that are not necessarily mainstream Democratic or Republican affiliated, that are organizing themselves online and using the tools to get their candidates. In fact, the best example in this last cycle has been Ron Paul, who, although he was running for the Republican nomination, was really propelled by libertarians who believe that open government and the open internet should be applied to politics.
His anti-war position helped him a lot, too.
Of course, that did, too. But he also raised a significant amount of money because he actually turned to his supporters and said, I don't really understand how this works. You know how to do this better than me, so you do it for me. And they self-organized and actually raised a huge amount of money on his behalf.
Brian, thanks for the idea.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So long. Let's now go to Matthew. Matthew is calling us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi. I'd like to see the internet used so representatives can vote via long distance, and then they can stay in district and they can represent the people, and they don't need a lobbying group in order to be represented.
And fly to Washington on weekends to go to the opera or something. What do you think of that idea, Andrew Roche?
We have a society that telecommutes and uses the internet to do all kinds of things remotely. There's no reason why our representatives shouldn't use it for the same purposes. And in fact, the internet offers a huge amount of transparency. So you could in effect create a virtual Congress online where the various senators and congressmen would in effect have to appear, but they wouldn't necessarily physically have to appear, so that you would be able to take a quorum without them all having to be in Washington.
But a lot of the business of government and the business of legislation gets done in elevators, walking down the hall, or in cloakrooms.
But the internet is changing that and allowing more people to participate, so that the lobbying that you hear about so often happening in Washington is now possible to happen online. And in fact, much of the money that is associated with politics happens in Washington, which is why everybody's there, not because they think it's actually the best place to get ideas.
Thanks for the call, Matthew.
Thank you very much.
So long. We're talking with Andrew Roche on the Opinion Page this week about his criticisms of the lack of e-government by the federal government of the United States. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Ray Ellen. Ray Ellen in Massachusetts.
Hi there. This is one of my favorite subjects. I work for a company which takes free information from the government, most of it posted online, and resells that to customers because we do a better job of organizing and archiving it. And as much as I love my customers and my salary, I shouldn't have a job. And what we've found is that the government is very good at what it's good at, and it's not very good at technology.
That's absolutely true. And one of the opportunities is for the government to start putting all government data online as much as is humanly possible, so that people can actually start using it, comparing it, and building tools that allow even more transparency in the political process. There's actually a great site called Open Congress that was launched about a year ago through a grant from the Sunlight Foundation that allows citizens to really look at all the legislation and all the activity of government as it happens, replacing something that many people may not have heard of, but was the common website for political information, which was called the Thomas, which was very difficult to use.
Right.
and not very accessible. There are tools that are being built out there that keep track of earmarks, keep track mm-hmm. of spending, grants, federal contracts, and maybe the Senate this year will pass a bill, excuse me, that will allow the senators to actually publish their donor information in real time. Right now, believe it or not, the Senate collects their donor information in digital form, and then they convert it into paper form to submit to the Federal Election Commission. The reason why is because it then takes the Federal Election Commission another 3 to 4 months to convert it back to digital form and publish it, which happens after the election. So they're doing it this way just to avoid public scrutiny of who's giving the money.
Ray Ellen, we're all for transparency and open government, but we hope you hang on to your job, too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Robert. Robert, with us from Philadelphia.
Yes. Hi, good afternoon. Two very quick questions that I don't quite understand. First, Why is it that our elected officials never utilize the internet to contact their constituents? That is, I have never, ever received a poll or a question about my feeling about an issue over the internet. And secondly, why can't the federal government implement the kind of access, a single point access? Like if I live in New York City, I only have one phone number to call about any question about government. And I'm wondering, it's almost impossible to determine which department to question if you have a question about, let's say, benefits or military service or anything. And I'm just wondering why a single point of entry into the government, and then they couldn't do the sorting rather than rely upon the population to figure out how to search the federal government through the net and then access them in that way. So I'll just take my answer off the air.
Okay. Andrew Ruscha, that first point that he made, though, the franking privilege allows members of Congress and the senators to send out mail for free. But in the days of email, why do we need it?
Well, we don't need franking, but we definitely need them to be contacting their constituents. And they're very often afraid to do that because they're afraid of how much volume they would have to respond to. So they much prefer to take phone calls and meet with lobbyists than to actually hear from their specific constituency. That's not true for all congressmen, of course, but here's a tool that actually makes it easier for them to find their constituents, to engage them, and more importantly, to introduce them to each other. And yet, as I said earlier, politicians seem to be oblivious to this new tool, and they're still living in the 20th century. As for the second part of that question, there's no reason why the information that's on the screen that the operator sees when you call 311, for example, in New York, why that information shouldn't be available to the public, why the public couldn't go into the same database that the operator sees and find information on their own. For some reason, our politicians think that most business still gets transacted over the phone. They don't realize that the public is, 90 million Americans now are getting their political information online, can go online and start finding information without having to take up the time of an operator and maybe even find better information than what the operator could provide.
And what do you think, in the few seconds that we have left with you, what do you think could be the impetus that will get the federal government to overcome these hurdles that you talk about and get moving on this?
Electing a president who we can actually call the first tech president, somebody who actually understands what the word broadband actually means, how getting more people online and making it possible for working class Americans to be able to afford to get online so they can participate in the 21st century economy, and will recognize that good government is transparent government, and the best way to do that is to open up all the data and all the government information to the public as fast as possible.
Andrew Ruscha, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it. Andrew Ruscha is the founder and publisher of the Personal Democracy Forum. He joined us from our bureau in New York. You can find a link to his article on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Tomorrow, designer babies on their way from science fiction to science. That's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.